Welcome to the Crude Life Media Network podcast. My name is Jason Spies, and I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist. And on today's episode, we talk with Jared Wirtz, executive director for the Western Area Water Supply Authority, about the origin of the project, getting water to the rural residents, and government competing with private business, plus much, much more. In just a moment, our interview with Jared Wirtz. But first, I want to take this moment to remind you good folks to please support our sponsors. They literally keep the lights on.
Jared Wirtz, executive director of Western Area Water Supply Authority.
Western Area Water Supply Authority, which commonly known as WAS, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so if people listening to the interview hear WAS, that's what we're referring to. It's an acronym for Western Area Water Supply and then Authority as well. So start off by just talking a little bit about the beginning of WAS and just how this thing came about.
Yeah, you know, WAS was really brought together by a group of entities that were looking for a better solution to meet their water needs. We had a region up here that doesn't really have that great a groundwater quality. Lacking in some quantity as well. So we have this huge Missouri River, this huge source running right next to us and through us. And it was really looked at by McKenzie and Williams County of how to get more water out into their areas. Communities like Watford had a very aged water plant. And were looking at building their own reverse osmosis plant at the time. And there was a study done. It was conducted by the Garrison Diversion Conservancy District to look at, you know, is it cheaper to build and replace water plants in these communities, or is it better to be a regional system and come out of one plant that already exists, that being the Williston Water Treatment Plant that had been there for quite some time. And when they did the study, you know, which is a non-biased thing, it's done by the state and by that district, that looked at it, and they looked at the plan and the concept, and they said, you know what, you're better off long-term to do a regional system and build transmission lines that network from that plant. And, you know, we all think it's a great idea in North Dakota, I think, to take advantage of that that resource that we have right in our backyard and lay claim to it and get as much water as we can to benefit our state. So that's kind of when the decision was made to team up as a group, and instead of trying to people get funding on their own, we might as well go as one common voice. So that's when the plan kind of started. We went to that first session in 2011 as the group that you've mentioned in other podcasts, the City of Williston, Williams Rural Water, McKenzie County Rural Water, Burke Divide, and R&T Water Supply Association. Those entities were kind of individuals down there requesting money to get this project started. You know, the first thing that needed to be done was expand the Williston Water Plant. In addition to that, we needed to get transmission lines built down to Watford City, over to Ray, as they were getting shortages as well. And keep in mind, this is in 2011 when it's really busy up in the Stanley, Ray, Tioga areas. Williston, Watford City is just starting to get a lot of activity down here. So things had to happen quick. We didn't have a lot of time if we wanted to sustain the population growth that we were seeing. So the legislature did decide at that time, and I want to make clear on this, it's not taxpayer money that we were using. It wasn't general fund money. It's water. The Water Resources Trust Fund is funded by 20% of the oil and gas tax revenues that the state brings in. And that fund goes to do water projects all across the state, whether it be flood control projects, rural water projects, regional projects, water plants, things like that that come out of there. So the state was pretty tight with money at the time because we were just starting to ramp up and get a lot of production going. And there were so many needs across the state. As you know, Fargo has flood control needs, Minot. Those are huge, millions and millions of dollars of projects. So they had to look and get creative. And that was in the business plan that went with this. Yes, does sell industrial water to the oil fields. And at that time, there was not a lot of supply out there. And like Mr. Harms had alluded to, the private or the public sector was taking care of about 20% of that market. And that's the business plan that we needed to maintain, was just to sustain that 20% of the market share. And the private could still have the 80%. So when we talk about coming in as a as a public agency and really trying to push private people out. That wasn't the plan. We knew that they had 80%. We just needed to sustain that 20% as things ramped up. So that there was depots that were put in this initial plan, and the legislature did come away with that first session giving us $110 million in loans. And that's really what got the project started. They created the Western Area Water Supply Authority, got us on the ground and said, here's a pot of money. You guys get the project started, and we know you'll be back because this thing is growing. And it did. And yes, the original plan was around only $150 million, we thought. But when we started building this thing, you know, there was a lot more growth that came about because of the number of the wells that were being drilled at the time. And that I think at one time there was only supposed to be 10 to 20,000 wells drilled in Western North Dakota. And that number is up to almost 60,000 now. So that's what this is all driven on. It's just population. And we have to meet those needs. So within just a short amount of time, we were able to get water to Watford City, brought them a new source where they can continue to grow. You had a community there that went from around 1,500 people, and we're currently at 8,000 to 9,000. So it's things like that that the people don't really understand sometimes and don't get the full story on. But those are success stories. I don't think there's anybody in Watford City or very few that would ever say that, you know, they would want their old water source back because it was very bad water. It wasn't a good source. It was non-reliable, and now we have a good quality source of water here in Watford, and same thing up north. Williston has been able to grow their city out because we've been able to expand the plant. Cities like Ray, Tioga, and Stanley, we built transmission lines to them that they've been able to increase their capacities and build out their communities. And on the other hand, we've went around in the last 3 or 4 years and went out to the public and out to the rural residents and said, who wants to get served with rural water? And that's really what a large majority of the project has really blossomed and grown to be such a high-priced project is because of the amount of people that want rural water. You know, we only had a few hundred requests at the time, and now we're, you know, have thousands of requests for rural water, and we're continuing to build that out. And that's our goal is to get water to everyone that wants it out in Western North Dakota.
So just to clarify, this is a state-owned, county-owned, a co-op of the counties or taxpayers, I guess. Who kind of is the ownership behind WAS, I guess?
It's a public entity created by the state. We're locally ran. We have a board of directors that's appointed by each of the members. These guys are farmers, ranchers, bankers, people that have lived here in Western North Dakota and continue to live here. They're the city councilmen in some cases. They're water board directors. They're just guys that people that have lived here, so they understand the concept, the needs that are going on out here. We operate like a co-op, for instance. I mean, it's a public entity. We're trying to get the water out here. Where the money that we make goes to either grow the project or pay off debt. So that is the whole concept behind it and the reasoning behind it.
So I'm trying to follow this here. So the original plan was to get water to the residents in the city, correct?
The residents in the communities and the whole region. We knew that there was needs out in the rural areas. It just had never been quantified because this is one of the last areas that have, you know, in this part of the state that has seen rural water in a lot of these rural areas. Most of the state has rural water. There's evidently some gaps here and there across the state, and this was one region that really hadn't been touched. McKenzie and Williams had some systems in place, but there was... Those are huge counties, and they were mostly kind of based around Watford City, and there was a system out of, you know, based out of Williston that kind of blossomed from there. But you have to remember that Williams and McKenzie counties are the size of them. There's a lot of people living out in the country that were a long, long ways from the capability of getting water, and that was the basis behind, you know, continuing to build the project out.
And I think what a lot of people don't really understand, too, about Western North Dakota, and I'm not sure if this is the case in Watford City and Williams County and that, but I know when you get down into the Marmoth and kind of that southeastern part, there's a lot of arsenic in the water and that sort of thing, in the groundwater. Is that the case in your part of the area? Is there a lot of contaminants and that sort of thing?
Yeah, we do have a few arsenic issues in some areas. In a lot of our cases, there's high sodium as well, high total dissolved solids that are in the water. In other areas, you can go 100 yards and drill a well and have decent water, and you can go a half a mile over or 100 yards over, and you don't hit anything. So it's very, the quantity out here is not the greatest either, and couple that with the quality that you have, and it's just it's expensive to drill a well, and there's the quality is kind of unknown in this area.
Okay, so the original plan, getting quality of water and quantity of water to the rural and the communities, essentially, and that sort of thing. And then it seems like something changed, and that seems to be like the sticking point, my understanding is, because everybody was on board with the original idea, and then something somewhere along the line changed, and it had to do with the selling of water to the oil companies or something along those lines. Am I following this right? Or because it seems to me you kind of understand what's going on in terms of some of the pressing points out there.
Yeah, no, and it's always been it started from day one. There was evidently a small group of people in North Dakota that were selling industrial water. That's that 80% that, you know, individuals were taking care of. In our business plan, showing an expansion of us growing and building, I think at the time we had 22 depots planned that we were going to build. And, you know, the funny thing that never gets mentioned is we only built a portion of those. We only have 9 depots going right now, but we were approved to do 22. And, you know, at this time we don't have any plans for any additional ones. But yeah, it started right away that there was a fight of we don't want public competing with private. And at that time, if we wouldn't have did this project, a lot of the fields in North Dakota wouldn't have got completed because there was no other source at the time to do some of these frac jobs and complete these wells. So there's a major thing that gets forgotten in that part of it. And if you don't have the pipeline like us and a system out there that's, you know, bringing water to these communities, you know, how do you house these people? How do you do those things? So there was also the side of the thing that the state had to look at and say, okay, yeah, we're going to compete with you, private industry, but we think this is a over $100 and some million market out there, and WAS just needs a share of that to keep this thing going and to benefit the public. You know, that's the other thing, that we're taking a public resource and putting it to public good. You know, at the end of the day, we're serving over 65,000 people with clean drinking water. And yeah, there's a handful of 100 or so people that may be being affected by us competing with them, but I think everybody can do the math on that and go, okay, yeah, I can see. If you put it like that, it's not such a bad thing when public has to compete. And that's the other thing, is these private guys aren't putting any water to anybody in the public sector. They're just bringing it to industry to make a profit, and I have no problem with that, but we had to do what we had to do and get the water to the people that needed it. And yes, there's always going to be a rub. Until we don't sell a drop of industrial water, there will always be that rub with that small group of individuals that are persistent that we shouldn't be in this market. But, you know, I think, and there's so much misinformation out there. They try to claim, and people try to say that we've missed payments and that we're bankrupt and going in debt. And, you know, it's really frustrating being the manager of this and seeing all the great things it's brought. But, you know, at the end of the day, we have never missed a payment to BND or the state. We're actually prepaid ahead. Some of the things that are coming out now during the legislature is, yeah, we are looking at restructuring some debt and refinancing because it was put so aggressive that we would have had to sell a lot more water. And in order not to compete and push the privates out, you know, we're trying to lessen our payments to the state. And it was really set up as an aggressive payback to the state of North Dakota. And just one comment on that is most of these regional projects in the state of North Dakota and water projects are done, they're heavily front-loaded with grant dollars, money that you don't have to pay back. In our case, it was a much different plan. The state was a little bit of tight with money at the time. They were, like I said, there were so many projects going on, they were able to give us loan dollars. And we said, you know what, that's fine. We have a source and a customer out there that's really hungry for water, and we think we continue to do this. Is there's not only frack flows, you know, that needed to be completed, these wells, there's also maintenance water needs. And I don't know how familiar you are with those. It's just the water that's needed to keep desalinate the wells and help them from not scaling up and allowing the oil to come to the surface. And a lot of the wells in our region need that source of water. So we know that there's a long-term source and need for water. And that's another part that couples with this. So, you know, there's good and bad to public competing with private, but when there's such a good benefit for us to do this, it kind of outweighs that. So we'll continue to make this work. You know, there's some simple things that we're trying to do down as a legislature and work within the state to just arrange some of that debt, and whether it be reducing some of the interest rate or lengthening some of the terms. We have every intention to pay the state of North Dakota back and not cost the taxpayer of North Dakota any dollars to build this project out on that side of the loans. Now, as we build and continue to build this project out, we're not putting any more loans on the industrial side. Last year, our last biennium and this current biennium, as we get more grant money, we need to match that with 25% loan dollars. We're getting those loan dollars and paying those back with domestic sales, so it's not affecting anybody other than the customers that are out here getting the water. So that's, you know, a good thing, and that should take less stress off the industrial side that we're not adding to it.
So as far as the finance goes and that sort of thing, the balance sheet's fine. You guys don't own any, you're not in debt, you're not missing payments, that sort of thing.
When you say we're in debt, we have debt out there because we've taken on loans, just like every other entity does throughout the state, because they have to match it with, you get long-term loans with low interest rates and you pay them back over time because you're dealing with a piece of infrastructure that, you know, in some cases, these pipelines are 75 to 100-year assets. Water plants are a little less than that because they age quicker and they have to be replaced quicker. But, yeah, so we have loans out there, but as far as, you know, we're not missing payments to anybody. That's such a piece of misinformation it's a little frustrating to hear that, because if somebody actually looked at the books, they would see that we're doing fine. We were able to take advantage of those really good times and prepay on a lot of this debt.
Okay, let's transition to HB 1020, House Bill 1020. I think that's kind of, we'll shed some light on some of this too. My understanding is that it's going to create some sort of fee or some sort of revenue or some sort of tax, or I'm not sure what the correct verbiage or term is on this, that would create some revenue for you guys. Is that the case? Just kind of explain HB 1020 for me a little bit.
Yeah, House Bill 1020 is the Water Commission budget that really has all the funding for the Water Resources Trust Fund. So it funds the Fargo Flood Control, it funds numerous projects throughout the state, and then inside of that is the general funding of the State Water Commission budget. So, you know, that's an appropriation bill that sometimes the House, or depending on which side it starts in, can add little amendments to it to do things. So we had a proposal that had never even contemplated or even thought of a tax. It was just restructuring a little bit of the debt, adding some length to it, and brought that plan forward. And they did kind of a mix of that. They did that, and they didn't change a few other things. And they thought, well, in order to cover some of the shortfall, we'll put a tax on the private side. And that was really wasn't our idea. And we were actually kind of amazed that got put in, and kind of caught off guard about it, that we wouldn't have to pay the tax either. So it's really just a royalty fee on on the amount of, so anybody selling industrial, privately owned industrial water would have to pay at 3 cents a barrel, approximately. For every barrel of water that they sell, they would have to pay 3 cents to the state, and the money gathered from that would help to pay our shortfall. And we didn't think that was ever going to probably work or pass, and it was never our intention to include that. And I think there's better ways to do it that don't cost anybody any money. And so we're trying to work through that. And I think that there was a numerous people yesterday testifying on the bill that didn't like the clause. And we'll have to see what the Senate does with that. I guess that's out of our hands. But look, we're continuing to pursue proposals that don't include that. And we have some things that'll work that are supported by the Bank of North Dakota and the Industrial Commission that we think are a more appealing way to do things.
Do you have any idea where that, I guess, came from? Who put that on there? What was the thought behind it? Were you involved with those discussions at all?
No. And, those were kind of things that were put in at the last minute of the bill, and evidently we're not part of that. We show our needs and kind of our ideas on things, and, the House of Representatives added that, and they felt that it was something that would work. And, I can't give you their thoughts or whose idea it was. I don't know those offhand. So, I'm sure you could find out who added those amendments. And the main thing is we'll see what happens on the Senate side. It's a two-stage thing here, and, the Senate can pick through it and eliminate it if they want to, and we'll just have to see what they decide.
I'm going to ask you what's next for WAS, but you mentioned the Fargo flood control a couple times, and I'm not big on speculation, but this to me seems like this could actually happen. And so I'm just going to ask you kind of a theoretical: if Fargo's flood control, which there's some issues there, who's going to pay for what, and they've already gone ahead and broke ground, and Minnesota's not really involved, and the federal money is kind of questionable, this sort of thing. And could that funding, in terms of what you guys are supposed to get and that sort of thing, could Fargo's flood impact management type thing affect you guys in any way?
Being a huge project like that is, I believe it's somewhere getting close to almost $1 billion, maybe a little less than that. But the state has been putting money aside for at least 2 or 3 bienniums, kind of as a savings and an allocation. So when it does happen, there's money available for it. So everybody knows that needs to be built, and that when it is, and there should be money set aside, and they may need some extra money. But, it doesn't get built overnight either. That's a huge project that, is going to take years to build. So I think the state has time, and evidently with the oil production that we're sustaining, there should be ample amount of money coming into the Water Resources Trust Fund to continue to fund that project, and I don't think it'll have too much effect on the rest of the projects. It'll be nice when it's done, as that'll free up more money, but I think everybody knows that's a project that's overdue and needed to get done once all the approvals get done.
So what's next for you guys? What's next on your guys' plan in terms of I guess your outlook for the rest of the year?
Well, evidently right now during the session, we're still trying to obtain more funding. We've spent the funding from last biennium or contracted it, or a majority of it spent. We've built this last session, we built over 600 miles of rural distribution line and served approximately 600 customers with that. That's just in addition to the transmission line work we did, the numerous pump stations and reservoirs we built to get rural water out there. And just to go back on one thing, when, there's a claim that WAS is overbuilt or put a bunch of infrastructure in for industrial, and that's, again, not true. The only portion of this whole system of the $309 million that's been allocated to WAS, only $10 million of that was ever obligated for industrial use, and that was the water depots that we installed that have made their money back. And the rest of the system, you know, anybody that works with this realizes that you have to build for a population. You don't want to go in and have to reinstall pipes. So we have pipelines out there that are sized for the population that the state of North Dakota and the studies that they did and provided to us that would be here in the next 20 to 30 years. So same thing with the water plant. That water plant will have to be expanded as well to serve that population. We've expanded enough for now, and we're actually seeing in the middle of summer when you have your highest water demands on your domestic side, you know, we're still starting to ramp up to the max of that plant. So in, you know, a matter of years, we'll have to expand that again to make sure that we service those domestic population needs. And that's what this is all based on. I know you'll hear people say that it isn't, but they're not engineers that deal with this, and we have numerous oversight by state entities, whether it be the Water Commission, the Industrial Commission, the Attorney General's Office, the Legislature, the Water Topics Overview Committee. We have more scrutiny and oversight than any other water project in the state, I believe. So, you know, we just want to continue the project. There's hundreds of people out there still waiting for water. It does take time to build these out. They're expensive projects when you're going to put that many miles of pipe in and try to serve that many people. The price tag does go up on it, but we think it's a good thing, and the people of North Dakota should get the water that they want. So we'll continue to pursue that funding in Bismarck and see what the legislature comes up with. And as soon as we get the go-ahead with that, we'll continue to build the lines out and get the water to people.
How much are you guys asking for?
You know, the request started at $60 million this biennium, but with the reduction in dollars that were going to be in the Water Resources Trust Fund, I think, you know, everybody in the state had to scale back their request. So we pretty much cut that in half and are asking for around $29 million. You know, I'm hoping it'll fall in between the $20 and $30 million of funding that we get, and we'll be able to continue the project.
And that's for the next 2 years?
Correct.
Okay. How about final thoughts? Anything that you want to end on? I like to give people the final word to go whatever direction they want to go in case they want to emphasize something once again or take a new direction or just kind of final thoughts. So the floor is yours, man.
Yeah, just, you know, this is a really great project. I mean, I know there's been some hiccups along the way, but, you know, for the most part, we had to build this in a short amount of time. We were able to do that. We're going to continue to build it out. And at the end of the day, you know, people just need to turn around and look and go, you know, the 65,000 people out there that are getting this water, and it's worth it. You know, we've laid claim to that Missouri River. We have an excellent facility at the Williston Water Treatment Plant, and we have a great thing here in Western North Dakota. It's going to help continue to grow this region and be here for future generations.
And that was Jared Wirtz, Executive Director for the Western Area Water Supply Authority. To listen to this podcast or other podcasts, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly Crude Life newsletter. We are also on social media. Please check out and like our Facebook page and Twitter page. And I'd like to ask you one last time to please thank our sponsors, support our sponsors. They literally keep our lights on here at the Crude Life Media Network, and we can't thank them enough. Eric Hatch and Hatch Coaching. Go to coachingwithhatch.com for more information or send me an email at jason@thecrudelife.com, and I will personally make sure that Eric Hatch gets your email. That's Eric Hatch with Hatch Coaching. MBI Energy Services. For more information about MBI or to see their latest job openings, visit their website at mbienergyservices.com. Well, that's it for this episode. Till next time, be happy, and remember, sometimes life can be crude. We'll see you next time, folks. Down on reading the same. But I got this morning, I was thinking, hit me on down in Louisiana.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids and Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.